You're listening to audio from Holy Cross Church in Tucson, Arizona. To find more resources and learn more about our ministry, please visit holycrosstucson.com.
So we're talking about the Daniel diet today. I like to name it that. In college, I read this passage with a group of friends, and we decided, well, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's be serious and do this. Not because we thought that it was a good idea, but because we thought that their other guys aren't tough enough to do it, so we will. Yes, classic toxic masculinity. Never underestimate it. We had put a bet on it, and whoever was going to last the longest. Our version was raw vegan, so you could only eat raw fruits and vegetables and drink water. Whoever lasted the longest would get some money from everybody else, and they'd have to like clean out their dorm room and stuff. 9 days later, I reigned victorious as the champion. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yes, yes. It was a tough 9 days. In that trip, like there was in the middle of it, we went to someone's lake house for the weekend, and some of the other guys who had quit the diet already thought, you know, this would be a really good time to get our parents to buy some pork tenderloin, maybe wrap it in bacon, and like we're gonna have some nice drinks, we're gonna have a whole lovely thing. And I'm just sitting there with like my, you know, fruit and vegetable tray. And I've thrown away the ranch. I can't even have the ranch. I'm just sitting there chewing for like 2 hours trying to eat, fill myself up on carrots. It was terrible. And I felt tired and sluggish. And I had like a weird amount of lactic acid buildup in all my joints and everything. At one point I was like, I like bananas. Maybe I can eat enough bananas to live on. Turns out if you eat like 20 bananas in a day, you get potassium overdoses and you get headaches from that. It was truly a rough time. I would not recommend the Daniel diet physically nor spiritually. And we're talking about it today. It's this text. I love this story because this to me is a wonderful, we're reading Daniel, right? And we run into this when we read the Old Testament. I tend to first think like, sweet, what is Daniel doing? And then how can I go do that thing? And that's not like the worst question in the world, but it's not the best one either. We want to look at this text and we want to see like not how can I go and copy his diet, but how do I find good news here? How do I find the gospel? How do I find Jesus? And if there is some stuff we want to copy from Daniel, which I think there probably is, then what is culturally relevant for us today, right? He doesn't eat the Babylonian food. The only Babylonian food I know of is like maybe the Persian room, Thornydale. It's good. I like the Persian room. So they've got great rice. Daniel wouldn't have had any, but if Daniel doesn't eat any wine, he wouldn't have had communion today. He wouldn't have had bread. So, like, surely we don't want to follow this all the way through. So, anyways, we're gonna think about the Daniel diet today. Why does he do this? Do we have to do it? The answer is no. And then what happens if we do do it? What happens if we do diet or do something similar? So, why does Daniel diet? Let's dig into the verses. I hope you guys had some fun discussions about this in Life Group this last week. Right? Why does Daniel diet? Look at verse 8 with me. It's really confusing. And the short answer is we don't really know. He says he resolved that he wouldn't defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Okay, so he's not going to defile himself. But what's not so clear is why he thinks the Babylonian king's food would defile him. Right? Like a couple of the common thoughts for this, we'll run through them just in case you're thinking about them or you're looking in your study Bible. The most obvious one maybe to some of us would be, well, maybe they were serving up pork and he's Jewish, so he's not going to eat that. Well, what about the beef? Right? Maybe the meat's been sacrificed to idols. Well, what about the wine? Wine's an important part of culture for Jews. That's certainly not, it's very kosher. Wine's entirely fine. Maybe he's a Nazirite. Okay, they wouldn't drink wine. You know, remember Samson, the Nazirite? No. But Daniel doesn't say anything about not cutting his hair. And they could eat meat. So we're not quite sure why he doesn't do those. Another thought is like, well, maybe it's been sacrificed to idols. That's a thing that shows up in the New Testament, right? Don't eat food that's been sacrificed to idols. That's true. And they're not supposed to do that in the Old Testament. But that's also putting something from like 600 years after this story back into this story. And it doesn't say anything about idols here. Another question would be like, the silly interpretation, I think, would be, it's just really good for him. This is what we were designed to live on, was just vegetables and water. I don't personally buy that. Maybe we were vegetarians in the fall, before the fall, but we're definitely not afterwards. So I don't know. Another one, you know, we talked about in life group, someone brought up, like, he can control this part of himself, right? Think about, like, Gandhi or something. Like, he can do a hunger strike. He can control this area of his life, even if he can't control everything else. I think that might have some legs. There's some credence there. Maybe it's a political, like a solidarity thing, right? He's in the king's court and he's getting the king's food, but the other exiles, like, they're mostly slaves, and so he's not gonna, you know, eat the nice king's food while his friends, well, besides these four friends, like the rest of his society is living in slavery. I think if my personal favorite might be that he's trying to, like, stay kind of apart from, he's not on the king's dole. Like, you know, the sort of southern pride that I grew up with that said, like, we're not going to take a handout, like, even if you needed it. We're not going to take that. Maybe he's just like, I'm not going to take the king's money. I don't know. We don't know, but he decides to not eat this food and drink because for some reason, doing this thing is going in his conscience to defile himself. And when he does that, I think the order is kind of important. He resolves in verse 8. He resolves that he's not going to defile himself. So he makes this decision. He makes this conscious decision. And for us, we can pause here and maybe start thinking, like, the obvious question, right? What would defile you? What do you need to resolve that you're going to be culturally different on? And Daniel resolves, I'm going to be different in this area. I think maybe the obvious thing, the one takeaway for us, at least, we don't know exactly why he chooses no meat and no wine, but he is being set apart when he does that, for sure, right? He's being set apart. And that word, set apart, we normally say that in Christianese as holy. To be holy is to be set apart. To be set apart is to be holy. And not just set apart in a weird way, right? Like in middle school, I was really set apart because I was a nerd. And like tucked in all my shirts the wrong time. And button. I was like, there's four buttons. You got to button up the polo the whole way. I was set apart, but not holy. Daniel chooses to be set apart in maybe a biblical sort of sense. He's holy. He's different from the culture around him. He chooses to be distinct. And so we don't know exactly why he's distinct in this area, but he is distinct. And when he makes this resolve in verse 8, I love what happens. He makes this resolve. Verse 8, Daniel resolved. Verse 9, God gave. I love that difference. He resolves, I'm going to live a separate place, and then God says, I'm going to help you do that. God helps him match his convictions. Again, it's weird. It's to me, it strikes me as really odd that he picks the food, right? He's had his name changed from, like, God's my judge to, like, well, Bel is my judge, like a Babylonian god. He doesn't seem to protest at that and say, call me Daniel. He is being trained as a magician. At the end of the test, at the end of the passage, he's going to get tested, you know, like, on his magician enchanting skills. So, like, Daniel would have totally read Harry Potter. He's in Babylon. Like, he's being trained as a magician and sorcerer and soothsayer. It seems, again, like, maybe that would be, for me, I'm not against reading Harry Potter. It's one of my favorite books. But that would have been a more reasonable approach to say, like, well, I serve Yahweh, so I can't really, like, learn to do witchcraft as a Babylonian, because that specifically tells us not to do that in the Old Testament. But no, he says, I'm not going to eat your steak, and I'm not going to drink your cab sav. And I would have said yes to both of those things. So he says this, he decides, I'm going to be set apart. And again, also a reminder, he's a teenager. How many teenagers do you know that have decided to only eat vegetables and water? So Daniel decides this, and God gives him favor in verse 9. God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. This is the guy that Daniel has to report to. We talked about this a little bit in our life group last week. It's weird the way he goes about this. You know, like, I was so obnoxious as a teenager, I would have said, like, I'm not going to do it, and, like, you can't make me. And Daniel doesn't say that at all. He says, like, hey, you know, look, verse 10, I fear the Lord. He says, he asks him, and the eunuch says, like, well, I would love to let you do this, but if you end up skinny and ugly from only eating vegetables, you're going to get me killed. He's going to cut my head off, which tells us something that if the chief of the eunuchs might get beheaded because Daniel is skinny, Daniel definitely might get beheaded because he's skinny. So it's a bold choice. He's really committed to this diet. And he, instead of just saying, I'm going to do it no matter what, right? You already killed my parents and you killed my friends and you took me away from my home and you carried me off to a foreign land and you've changed my name. Like, I'm just not going to eat and like do come what will. Instead of that, he's like, okay, well, I get that. Like, you can't just give us 3 years to try this out. So he finds the steward, maybe the guy under the chief of the eunuchs, the one who's specifically in charge of him and his friends in verse 11. He finds the steward. He says, let's just try a 10-day test. Let's see. He did one more day than I made it through. But let's just try a 10-day test. We'll just eat vegetables and water for a week and a half. And then we'll see how we look after that, right? And what do they do? Verse 13, let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the food be observed by you and deal with your servants according to what they see. So the guy listens and tested them. And at the end, they're better in appearance and fatter in flesh. I had some fun Hebrew reading this week, where there was a whole lot of silly debate over the, what is that, verse 15? Better appearance and fatter in flesh. Does that mean that they're like muscular, or does that mean that they got a little chubby? Does that mean, there was a whole lot of discussion over like acne in the ancient Near East, and like better in appearance, is this like their skin cleared up because he's probably a teenager? We don't know. It doesn't seem very important to me, but for whatever reason, they looked better at the end of 10 days. And so the steward says, sweet, let's do this. Now, just a reminder, Daniel is here he's been taken from his homeland. He's a child or a young teenager, and he's living in the court of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And this is the 10-day test to see if he can stay on this diet for 3 years. He's in a 3-year-long boarding school Babylonian enchanter program. He's gotten accepted, and he's been shipped off. And so he's there. The 10-day test is just to see if he's going to be able to keep this up and look all right at the end of the 3 years when he finally gets tested. And so Daniel doesn't just keep the diet going for 10 days. He does it for, we think, the passage, I think, tells us he does it for 3 years and maybe for longer. So he goes on, he does this test, and it's just so odd to me, the way he chooses to be set apart. Not only is it this food and drink, but then he like asks permission to do it. But thankfully, when he asks permission, he says, this is something I want to do. God gives him favor in verse 9. God gives him favor. We're going to come back to that. But God is going to be with Daniel throughout all of this in the book. God's going to be with us as we try to live out our convictions, even if I hope my convictions don't lead me to have to only eat bread or vegetables and water. So he lives this out. I think as we think about why does Daniel diet, the obvious question, and we do need to spend a little bit of time on it, is what are ways that we should be dieting? What are ways that we should be living set apart as Christians? Right? I've already showed my hand a little bit. I don't think that this involves you needing to only eat vegetables and water. We still have donuts out there. Eat them all up. But there are ways that we should live as set apart people of God in the exile, right? We don't live in Israel anymore. We are God's people. The church today is Israel. And you live in the world in a culture that is vastly and quickly becoming, if it ever was a Christian culture, it's definitely not going to stay that way, it seems. So how do you live in your Babylon, and what are the areas where you need to draw the line? I don't know that this passage, I don't think the point is to tell us how to figure out where to draw the line. He just says almost nothing about that, and I've spent longer than I should have hypothesizing about why he decides not to eat that food. But it does tell us a lot about whenever your conscience is pricked that you should draw the line somewhere, what does Daniel do? He sets his resolve. He says, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to live out my convictions. And then what happens next? God gives him favor. This is really encouraging for you and me. As we're thinking about like ways that we might need to live out our convictions, that we might need to copy Daniel's diet in some sort of way of our own, know that the success here is going to be coming from God. It's not going to come because it's just a good diet. Our areas where we want to live as separate people in the salt and light, in the society around us, God's going to bless that, and he's going to have to for it to work. And then Daniel is extremely polite about this. I think this is another good takeaway for us. He could be, you know, a real jerk about this. He could be really obstinate. He could just endanger the chief of the eunuchs by just doing the diet. Instead, he says, like, no, I care about you. I don't want you to get your head cut off because I just chose to do this weird diet. Let's do a test run. And so he does a test run. I think that's another thing that might be helpful for us. If we're going to be different in society around us, let's be gentle in how we're different. Let's ask permission maybe to be different where appropriate, where we can. Let's take risks like Daniel, but we also need to think about, you know, like he could have totally lost the point of this if he's so obnoxious about the diet that it sort of outweighs the witness that he's trying to show, right? Thinking of the New Testament in 1 Corinthians where Paul says, you know, you can have all the spiritual gifts in the world, but if you have not love, then you're just like somebody hitting a cymbal. I wish we had a cymbal up here. I would hit it really loud. But you're just like somebody hitting a cymbal really loudly. Like you're just obnoxious. You can have all the spiritual gifts as a Christian. You can be totally right in the Facebook argument and yet be totally wrong if you have not love. And that's, I think Daniel lives this out beautifully. He has these convictions. Doesn't say it's based in love, but he lives this out really gently. That's something for me that is really convicting. You know, ways that we think about maybe how should we be set apart as people of God. There's a whole lot, right? Maybe you wear different clothes. Maybe you listen to different music or watch different movies or books. I love thinking about this. We're in a little book club with some of Gracie's friends, and like every month it's like some sort of new question of like, I don't know if I can read that book. Like there's some stuff in there I've got some real issues with. And it's like this fun question of like, that's a real question for your conscience. And sometimes it's been the case where I've chosen to read it and Gracie said like, I don't know if I can finish that one. And it's gonna be on an individual basis sometimes. I think another good example and just one to throw out there because it's not hypothetical, you all have experience with this, is like, where should your kids go to school? Where should your kids go to school? I'll show my hand. If you think there's one answer, then I disagree with you. There's not just one answer to that. But we have to think about this on some level, right? Your kids should they go only to a Christian school where they only learn Christian things? Should they be homeschooled so you can just watch over everything? Should they be in public school so they're like Daniel? They're living in the exile, learning anything and like learning how to be exiles. There's a good argument for each of those. Maybe some hybrid option. I don't know what you think, but if you have kids, you've had to make some, or you were about to have to make some decision about that. And I hope that you have strong convictions around it. I also hope you have some grace for your brothers and sisters. As I know, as a church, we have a variety of opinions about that. So just one example of ways that we're going to have to think through this question of how do we, in a country that is not Israel, it's closer to Babylon. How do we live like Daniel? It's not going to be a literal diet in this sense, but how do we do that? Why does he do that? And then I want to look at the next little bit and think about this question, like, do we have to diet? Do we have to diet? Well, I mean, I've already showed, I think we should stay set apart in some ways, but why don't we have to diet? What if you're bad at that? Maybe you're listening to this and you're like, I'm not just dieting, but I'm bad at keeping the law. I'm bad at staying set apart. You know, it's a lot easier just to fit in and be normal. Daniel has this conviction. The only thing he tells us is that he says in verse 8, right, that the king's food is going to defile him. It's going to defile him. It's going to make him unholy. It's going to make him common. It's going to make him not right in the eyes of the Lord. And, you know, this is one of those questions we can ask Jesus on. What defiles a person? Jesus answers that. What defiles a person? Maybe think about that for a second if you don't already remember what his answer is. What is it that you could do or might be doing that would defile you? Is it eating Babylonian food? Is it watching the wrong movies? Is it actions? Is it the status of your heart? What is it that would defile you? Jesus answers this directly, and this is why we don't have to diet. In Mark chapter 7, he says, hear all of me and understand there's nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him, but the things that come out of a person are what defile him. Which I think Jesus is speaking maybe directly, he's definitely speaking directly to an audience that has read Daniel. And he's commenting on this. He's not saying Daniel did the wrong thing, but he's commenting that don't come away from the story thinking you get defiled by what you do or don't eat. Jesus says to him, Since, do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him? Verse 19, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is then expelled. Thus he declared all foods clean. He said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come all these things. Come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, evil, slander, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. Jesus is telling us really clearly, he's speaking to the Pharisees, you know, they'd come back from Babylon. They'd ended the exile, and they said, never again are we going to be like the Old Testament Israelites who were defiled, who worshipped other gods. We're going to be like Daniel. We're going to be so good and set apart. We're going to follow the food laws perfectly. And if we do that just right, as a nation, as individuals, if we could all get it just right, then God would be happy with us. Then he would be happy. We would be his people, and he'd be our God. And maybe he would come back. Maybe like then he wouldn't be upset. Maybe then we would be free. Let's just try to earn our way into God's favor. And that's not a bad thought. It's just not right. It's the same temptation we face today all the time, right? Like we take good things. God tells us about good things like spiritual disciplines and going to church and reading your Bible and praying and worshiping and singing. And then we say, like, if I could just do it good enough, then maybe God would be happy with me. If I could just be like Daniel and I could, like, just be good enough on this diet, then maybe God would be happy with me. But God says, no. Jesus says, that's not what defiles you. That's not what makes you unholy. It's what's in your heart that makes you unholy. It's your inclination towards sin and evil and being messed up. That's a lot scarier to hear. It's a whole lot scarier to be told that the stuff on the inside is the problem. You know why that's scarier? It's because you can't change the stuff on the inside, right? You can't. Maybe you can change it a little bit, but you really can't like get rid of it in its entirety. Can you get rid of coveting, the wanting something that's not yours? Maybe you can choose not to act on it, but I don't know how you get rid of not wanting it. Can you get rid of deceit? Maybe you can like not lie openly, but how do you like stop hiding things even from yourself? I don't know. You pray, the Holy Spirit helps, but like I don't think we're going to be batting 100 on that anytime soon. And this is where grace comes in. This is where we see the gospel. We are not saved. We are not given God's grace by being able to live out this diet or any other perfectly. As God's people today, God's not going to be happy with you. You're never going to be able to stay separate enough that God says, okay, now I can bless you. You're never going to be able to be holy enough that God says, now you've done all the spiritual disciplines and you've filled in your prayer journal enough times and you've been to enough evening prayer services and you have a perfect attendance at Sunday school. Now I'm happy with you. That day will never come. That day will never come. And that's not bad news. That's good news. You know why? Because God has already looked at you and said, I'm happy with you. God has already looked at you and said, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. He does not look at you and tally up all your sins, tally up your good things, and then weigh them out. If he does, you're going to lose every time. Instead, he looks at you and he says, I see the righteousness of my own son, Jesus Christ, in you. I'm adopting you as my child, and I love you. With the love of a perfect parent. I love you that much. And it doesn't matter how well you try to stay set apart, I'm going to love you either way. That's how adoption, that's how parents are supposed to work. That's how God does it perfectly. He says, I love you, you know, of course, so much so that he's even going to send his son Christ to die for you. What do we have to die? Do we have to live in a perfect set apart way like Daniel in order to make God happy with us? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Are you able to live set apart from society in such a way that then God will be happy with you? Absolutely not. You can try it, it'll kill you. But God says instead, rest in me, rest in my love. Rest in who I have called you to be. Daniel is going to live out his entire life as this exile, a foreigner in a foreign land. And he lives it out for quite a long time. It tells us at the end of the passage that he stays there, verse 21, until the first year of King Cyrus. So the chapter starts in the first year of King Nebuchadnezzar and it ends in the first year of King Cyrus. That's roughly 70 years. So, you know, let's say Daniel's 15 when it starts. He's an 85-year-old man when Cyrus comes to power. And he's there for quite a long time. He has to wait quite a long time, and his identity the whole time is not in how perfect he fulfills the Mosaic Law, not in how good of a Jew or Christian in our terms he would be, but in who he is as God's people. I hope you live a very, very long time as well. And I hope we live as exiles, I think. That's one of our points in the series. Among other frameworks, we should be living like exiles in the world today. And we're going to have to ask these questions like, what about the ways we fail? What happens when we fail to be set apart in the ways that we should? And Daniel is maybe not perfect in this, but he lives it out for a very, very, very long time. I want to look at the end of the passage and ask this question, what happens if we do diet? So we've said that we don't, why does Daniel diet? He's not trying to be happy with God. He's trying to follow his conscience. What we don't have to diet because Jesus has done it for us. He's lived it perfectly out for us, and we're not defiled by what we eat or don't eat. But then what happens if we do actually successfully or somewhat successfully stay separate in the world around us? Look at the end of the passage for us. Verse 17, as for these four youths, Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, although it calls them their Hebrew names here, God gives them learning in all skill and all literature and wisdom. And Daniel even had understanding in all visions and dreams. So like he's a little bit of a fortune teller maybe. We're going to see that in the next week. And at the end of the time, when the king had commanded they should be brought in, end of the time here is the three-year testing period. So Daniel's already been on this diet for 3 years now, in verse 18. 3 years have passed, and in history, the king's getting ready to go and raid Jerusalem again, by the way. At the end of the time, the king had commanded that they should be brought in, and the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king spoke with them, and among all of them, all of the other people who had been brought in, nobody was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, verse 19 struck me because all of them, some people think that means all the other people who have the magicians and soothsayers, but it tells us that later in the verse. I think it means all the other people, all the other young guys who have been taken out of Jerusalem, all the other exiles here. And out of all those people, these four have been the ones that said, I'm gonna live this out. I'm gonna like, I don't know why, maybe they, hopefully they knew why, but I'm gonna follow our convictions and we're gonna stay separate in Babylon. And out of all of them, no one was found like these four guys, and therefore they stood before the king. Verse 20, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better. So if we diet, we're gonna be 10 times smarter. That's not the takeaway. But Daniel shows up 10 times better. Look at what he shows up 10 times better at. That's, to me, the more interesting part of this passage. What is he 10 times better at? Like, algebra? Maybe. He's 10 times... They did a lot of astronomy and astrology, so maybe he learned about the stars. But what it notes here is he's 10 times better than all the magicians and all the enchanters that are in the kingdom. You know, I don't exactly know what that means. I don't exactly know what Daniel is learning and how he proves that. I think the rest of the book is going to kind of show us that. But Daniel goes through his tryouts. He takes his ACT, and his ACT is not measuring his reading comprehension skills. It's measuring how good of a magician. This is a lot closer to Harry Potter than anything else. He does this, and he's 10 times better. He gets a great score. And I think it's just so interesting. Daniel gets honored by the Lord. God gives him understanding. He gives them learning. He gives them understanding in verse 17, learning in all skill and all literature and all wisdom. When we follow God's command to stay set apart, he actually honors that. He actually honors that. And I think verse 21 is maybe a hard and sad clue for us as to what happened to Daniel's diet. It doesn't say anything else about it, to my knowledge, in the rest of the book. He finishes he does a 10-day test. He does a 3-year test. And then it says, in the end of the story about the diet, Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. I don't think Daniel ever stopped the diet. This passage just read in straight order would lead me to believe that he spent his entire adult life, all 70 years of the exile, living on vegetables and water, maybe fruit too, but living on fruit and vegetables and water. Daniel, so he goes through 10 days, he goes through 3 years, and then he goes through 70 years. And while he's doing this, while he's waiting, I think Tim brought this up in our life group last week. We got to give at least a little bit of credit to God. Like, Daniel's not taking a multivitamin during this. God's sustaining him. This is at least a little bit, you know, I don't know how healthy their beans and lentils were, but maybe they weren't processed in all the ways, I don't know. But there's got to be some gift of the Holy Spirit that helps Daniel look better in appearance and be fatter in flesh and stronger. This is not just a physical takeaway from this diet. This is the work of God. This is his miraculous intervention through his Holy Spirit in the physical world around us. Something that sometimes we're kind of hard, it's hard to admit when we see it happening, but in Scripture, we should be ready to give God credit. Daniel doesn't just succeed because this diet is good for his body. You guys ever watch Parks and Rec? Chris Pratt on there, he's like the big guy. And then he got into superhero movies. Now he's in a lot of the Marvel stuff. And he lost a bunch of weight. He lost a whole lot of weight and got really strong and everything and turned from, you know, kind of like the fat guy in Parks and Rec, Fat Pratt, to strong Chris Pratt. And one of the interviews he did, they're like, "How'd you do this, Chris Pratt?" And he said, "Well, I followed this thing my church told me about for 21 days. I did the Daniel diet. I just ate vegetables and things from seeds and drank water." And so Chris Pratt checks out on the Daniel diet. Yeah, it's a very silly story because he does it for 21 days, which Daniel does it for 10 days and then 3 years and then maybe 70 years. He never does it for 3 weeks, right? Like, I don't even understand why Chris Pratt thought 21 days would be significant as a time to do it. But Chris Pratt's a fan of the Daniel diet. You can do with that what you will. Maybe it does help him physically for a little bit, but then in the interview I was reading about him, everyone was saying there were lots of, you know, important medical disclaimers saying, like, this diet's not good for you long term. Like, if you only eat this long term, you're going to really lack a lot of things you need. This is more intense than just being a vegetarian. It's more intense than just being a regular vegan. Like, you should really talk to your medical provider. I'll issue all those same warnings to you guys. But I think I bring that up to say that Daniel is sustained in this. He diets. He pulls himself out of this Babylonian culture in this one unique way, and God meets him with that graciously. God gives him not only understanding and wisdom, but he gives him fatness in flesh. That's not what we would wish for, but he gives him a better appearance. There's good news for us here. When we feel convicted to live in a different way than our society, God honors that. If we do diet, metaphorically speaking, we live in a different way than the people around us, God meets us there. He gives us blessings in the midst of our punishment. You know, that's a weird way to think about that, but I think this is the right context. Daniel's been exiled. He's been taken away, and he's living out the timeout period. It's a 70-year-long timeout, but he's living out the timeout. I mean, for those of you who have kids, or if you've been a kid in timeout, I can't imagine any of you would have ever gotten in trouble. But, you know, you get sent to the corner, you're in timeout, maybe, you know, you're being punished. And then imagine that the person punishing you says, like, "By the way, I've got a gift for you. Like, you messed up, and you're in the principal's office, and we're going to go to an amusement park." That makes no sense. It's incoherent. How can he be punished and be given a gift at the same time? Well, this is part of what we're going to keep seeing in Daniel. This is part of what I hope you see in your life, is that even as God's people live out the effects of sin in their life, even as they live out the exile, God continues to meet Daniel and give him gifts graciously in the middle of this. Even as you live out the sad and horrible effects of sin in your life, the sin from other people, the sin from your parents, the sin in the world around you, and the sinful decisions you've made yourself, we all have, God still meets you and says, "I'm not just going to make you live out the punishment. You don't just have to sit in time out. I'm also going to give you grace. I'm also going to forgive you." God meets us with grace in the midst of our failures. Daniel, again, he's a teenager. This is the beginning of his time. He's probably weeping. He's waiting. And it tells us he's going to wait at least 70 years to be set free again. And God meets him there with comfort and with hope and with even some physical blessing. I think here I was reminded of Christ in the wilderness, right? We're talking about weird diets. Christ goes to the wilderness when he's tempted, 40 days, 40 nights, something significant about that. He doesn't eat anything. The devil comes and says, you know, if you're Jesus, like, why don't you turn the rocks into bread? That vision never meant much to me until I moved to Tucson and you walk around the desert. There's a lot of rocks. That would be a whole lot of bread. He says, why don't you turn the rocks into bread? And he says, well, man doesn't live by bread alone. And the temptation is not just to not use his magic powers. That's a joke. But to the temptation is to say, I'm going to live as a human. I'm going to face physical need and want like my people have. I'm going to trust that God is going to sustain me even though my stomach is growling and my blood sugar is low and I'm really hot and I don't feel good. He could have fixed it. It's the same thing, that the soldiers tell Christ on the cross, if you're really Jesus, then just get off the cross. And Jesus says, no, I'm gonna live this out perfectly. Daniel lives this diet, I think, my guess is 70 years. And I don't know if he's perfect or not in it, but I know that Jesus was perfect in it. I know that as we try to live as separate people in the world, we're going to make some mistakes in there, right? Wherever your convictions lie, maybe it is, and this would be good convictions to say, like, maybe I shouldn't kind of watch that film. I shouldn't listen to this sort of music. I don't know where your convictions lie. I'm not trying to tell you that. But I hope that you honor them wherever they do lie, wherever God would have you live in a different way than culture. Wherever those are, you know, hear this. There's grace when we're imperfect. There's grace when we mess up because Jesus lived perfectly for you. Jesus lives through the wilderness. He lives through his temptation, and he doesn't turn all the rocks into bread. He stays hungry, so you don't have to. It's amazing and good news. And yet, you know, what happens if we do diet? What happens if we do stay separate? God honors us. God honors that he meets you in your waiting and in your weeping with real blessings. I'm not turning into a prosperity gospel preacher, I promise. But God does really bless his people. I'm not going to tell you, like, if you give some amount of money or something, that's going to come back in some... That's just really silly. But God does promise to meet you. God meets you. I don't know what that's going to look like. Daniel didn't know what that was going to look like. He could have gotten skinny and had his head cut off. But God will meet you. The story is promise of that. And we're going to keep reading it week after week as we see Daniel in more and more trials. Just want to think about at the end, you know, this question I hopefully will ask every week in life group. What is good news in this passage, right? If you're going to tell your friend, you're going to tell your family, you're going to tell your neighbor, a coworker, you know, they're like, oh man, so you went to church last week, like other than everyone else being hypocrites because they're Christians for some reason. What'd you learn about? Hopefully you learned something good. You hear something good in the passage. I want to find Jesus here. We see Jesus because he lives out Daniel's diet way better than we could. We see Jesus when we're reminded we don't live by bread alone. We don't live by the physical means, the food and water that we put in our body. That's not the only thing keeping you alive. It's God, it's grace keeping you alive. As you're waiting, maybe 10 days, maybe 3 years, maybe 70 years, God sustains you. As you're being tested, like Daniel, right? Trying to pass tests that are worldly, silly tests. Daniel's trying to pass his magician school. And God meets him in that and lets him passes it. That's amazing. We can survive long periods of trials. And then God meets us with forgiveness. Daniel's in punishment. He's in the exile. He's in time out. And instead of just saying, I'm just going to give up and pout in the corner because God's not going to help me because I've been exiled, God continues to meet him there. He says, I forgive you. I love you. Yeah, you're still in the exile, but I'm going to give you my grace. God gives, shows up multiple times. Passage, verse 9, I think verse 17, God shows him forgiveness. In the midst of whatever punishment or pain you're going through, I really hope that you don't come away hearing that you should only eat vegetables and water, but I really do hope you come away hearing that God is with you, God gives his grace to you, and as you try to figure out how you're going to live separately tomorrow, this afternoon, at work, in school this week, as you try to figure that out, I hope you know and hear that Christ is with you. He's done this perfectly, so you don't have to do it perfectly, and that he's meeting you in your waiting and in your weeping.
Thanks for listening to this audio from Holy Cross Church. Visit us at holycrosstucson.com to find more resources and connect with us.